Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're going to be talking about periods within correctional facilities. I'm Bhavna.
And I'm Venila. And this is Women's Health Incarcerated.
Now, we know that this topic can feel somewhat controversial to a lot of our listeners, especially considering the fact that periods aren't even talked about in some cultures and communities and societies. But let's face it, periods are a reality for at least half of the world's population, and that definitely includes those individuals who are behind bars, which is something I never thought about before this podcast and this research, so I'm glad that we can start having these conversations with each other. Before we start on discussing what periods behind bars really look like, we wanted to start with some clarifiers. So first, not everyone who experiences a period identifies as a woman. In fact, the terms cisgendered or cis woman or cis men are used to identify individuals whose gender identity matches their assigned sex at birth, whereas the term transgender is used to identify individuals who identify with a gender that differs from their assigned sex at birth. So in regards to the experiences of transgender people within correctional facilities, there is much to be said, and we are working on compiling this information to share with you all in the future. But based on the information we have gathered now from people we've spoken to both in the field as well as formerly incarcerated folks, the majority of what we currently know about menstrual experiences in the system is regarding the experiences of cis women. So throughout this episode series, when we say woman, we are referring to cis women, unless otherwise specified.
All right, so moving on to the next point of clarification. What even is menstruation and why does it occur in the human body? Some of our listeners may not actually know this stuff in detail, which makes sense if this biological process doesn't affect you, but it might be helpful for our listeners to understand more about menstruation for this episode. We want to start off by saying that menstruation is not unclean or pathological in nature, but a natural physiological process. In simple terms, menstruation is the process where blood and tissue from someone's uterus comes out of their vagina, and this process happens approximately once a month as the body gets ready for pregnancy. For people who menstruate, their body has a set number of eggs, and each month, one egg gets ready to be fertilized by traveling towards the uterus, which is where the fetus develops throughout pregnancy. So if the egg isn't fertilized, then the lining of the uterus as well as the egg are discarded, which is what causes the vagina to release blood. Usually a period lasts for about 3 to 7 days every month, but the exact amount of time differs depending on the individual. Period flow can also be different based on the individual because some people may experience a very heavy flow of blood for multiple days, while others might experience a really light flow for the entire time.
As the body is going through this menstrual process, there are also changing levels of hormones in the body, which can cause some pretty debilitating symptoms. Some of the symptoms that can come with periods are cramps, nausea, constipation, headaches, muscle aches, back pain, and loss of energy. And that's just to name a few. These symptoms are different for every individual, and sometimes they're even different each time that you experience a period, which can make it a pretty unpredictable and aggravating situation. Now, if you can imagine all of these unpleasant feelings coupled with minimal aid in reducing these symptoms, including a lack of proper hygiene products to literally absorb the bleeding, which is the most basic symptom, now you have a slight glimpse into the experiences of many women who are currently living behind bars, whether that be in prisons or in jail cells. And that brings me to our final point of clarification for now, the difference between jails and prisons. So jails are facilities that are used to hold individuals who have just been arrested and are awaiting their trial or sentencing, or who are serving smaller sentences, like in the case of misdemeanors. Prisons are facilities for individuals who have been officially convicted of an alleged crime. Within prisons, there are also differences between a state prison and a federal prison. State prisons are under the jurisdiction of the state government, while federal prisons are under the jurisdiction of the federal government. And so, individuals who have allegedly broken a state law are typically sent to a state prison, while those who have allegedly broken a federal law are sent to a federal prison.
All right. So, you may not realize it, but as you'll soon see, this issue is pretty complex, and there's a lot that has to be said. So we're going to be splitting this topic up into two different episodes. This first episode will focus more on the physical health effects of improper menstruation care, as well as key legislation and policies being enacted that are currently dealing with this issue. And next week's episode will discuss more of the social and psychological implications of experiencing periods behind bars. So to officially start, we want to begin with one of the most pressing concerns regarding this issue. Let's talk about accessibility.
Basically, when it comes to accessing these products in these facilities, there are a lot of complications that tend to arise. So this definitely came as a shock to us while we were researching, but feminine hygiene products are actually not free in all jails and prisons across the country. In fact, buying pads and tampons from the commissary, which sort of acts like a convenience store in jails and prisons, can cost a lot, sometimes even more than outside of these institutions. In some cases, the price of a box of tampons can be as high as $6.99, which may not seem like a lot, but if you consider the fact that these individuals can earn as low as 9 cents an hour after tax, it clearly can be difficult to pay for these products.
Yeah, and keep in mind that a gumball from one of those gumball machines you can find in arcades or outlet centers is literally 25 cents.
Additionally, incarcerated women are less likely than incarcerated men to receive outside financial support, and having to pay for other necessities like deodorant and shampoo, as well as feminine hygiene products, can be a huge burden considering the fact that many women need these products every single month. Also, while many jails and prisons do provide a handful of free pads, they charge for tampons. And on top of that, the pads that they do offer are usually very poor quality. For example, formerly incarcerated individuals in Arizona claim that because the quality of the pads offered was so bad, at times they had to wear multiple pads at once. This can be extremely difficult to tolerate, especially when the amount of products incarcerated women are given per month is already severely limited, and the cost to buy more is often too much to pay without sacrificing other basic necessities like soap and toothpaste.
Also, not only does the poor quality of pads and tampons affect incarcerated women negatively, but the limited amount of products allotted per individual can lead to horrifying repercussions. Lack of resources can lead many menstruating individuals to reuse pads for several days in a row, which can be particularly difficult for those with a heavier flow. One individual who was formerly incarcerated at the York Correctional Institute in Connecticut documented that many times she noticed pads literally fall out of individuals' pants since they had to double up on the days that these poor quality pads were being used. Others often experience staining of their uniforms, which can actually result in a disciplinary ticket for violating dress code. And disciplinary tickets can oftentimes lead to a loss in phone and visitation privileges, as well as commissary privileges, meaning that staining your pants with blood can prevent you from buying more products to prevent further staining your pants. That's pretty insane.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon that women have to literally beg correctional officers for more products, or sometimes even prove to them that they need more. And if the commissary is closed or out of stock, then they are left helpless. So the lack of these basic necessities is horrifying, unnecessary, and downright inhumane. Accessibility to feminine hygiene products is also very closely tied to the next issue that we wanted to discuss, policy. And keep in mind that these policies and legislations that we'll be discussing are what was happening at the time of this episode's making.
To start, we do want to acknowledge that there has been recent legal action taken to ensure free products for menstruating individuals in federal prisons. On December 21, 2018, President Trump signed into law the First Step Act. While this act is meant to work towards reducing recidivism rates for federally incarcerated individuals, it also includes a really small section, Section 411, that officially requires all federal prisons to provide quality hygiene products like pads and tampons to incarcerated individuals for free. More specifically, Section 411 breaks down healthcare products into three components: 1, availability; 2, quality of the products; and 3, the type of products. So first, with availability. The section states that products will be free of charge for incarcerated individuals and will be, quote, in a quantity that is appropriate to the healthcare needs of each prisoner. The writing regarding the quality of products is specified to, quote, conform with applicable industry standards. And lastly, the type of products are stated to be talking about tampons and sanitary napkins. This is a great step. This means progress, and we're definitely glad to hear it. But there are some factors to consider when we look at this law more closely. First of all, the wording is pretty ambiguous. Like, what does it mean for products to be available in a quantity that is appropriate to the healthcare needs of each incarcerated individual? We talked about before how women can experience different levels of flow. But how is someone with the heavy flow supposed to prove that they require more pads than the standard amount? This wording can clearly lead to a lot of rule bending to ultimately fit the needs of those in charge, not those in need. Also, it's super vague to state that quality must conform with applicable industry standards, because again, what does that even mean?
When researching this act, we came across an article by the American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU, and found it necessary to quote a portion of it. The article claims, "These changes are welcome improvements, but they only begin to scratch the surface for incarcerated women. Though cost will no longer be an issue, access to sanitary napkins and tampons is not guaranteed, since institutions can continue to set arbitrary monthly quotas on such supplies. The act will also not end policies that deny or delay laundry privileges or a change of clothes to someone who has bled through their clothing. And if you are in federal immigration detention or are one of the unknown number of transgender prisoners in federal men's facilities, you are not covered by the legislation at all."
Okay, wait. I just want to repeat that last part for some emphasis. If you are in federal immigration detention or are one of the unknown number of transgender prisoners in federal men's facilities, you are not covered by the legislation at all.
When we are discussing health rights, it's important to recognize that many voices go unheard, especially of those who do not fall into the binary standards of gender and of those who are confined outside of prison and jail facilities. This is not okay, and there are clearly a lot of gaps with this policy and a lot of implications that are going unaddressed. One more crucial factor to note in terms of the First Step Act's phrasing is that a key word in this law is federal, as this act only pertains to women incarcerated in federal prisons.
According to the Prison Policy Initiative's 2018 data, only 16,000 of the 219,000 incarcerated women in the U.S. are held in federal prisons. However, about 99,000 are held in state prisons, 89,000 are held in local jails, and the rest are in detention centers or are youth offenders. This means that only about a little over 5% of our nation's incarcerated women are benefiting from this law.
So what that means is that 95%, or the vast majority of women who are incarcerated in some capacity in our country, don't actually get to reap the benefits of the First Step Act. Also, only some states have any legislation that's working to provide these products freely for their incarcerated populations. Following the First Step Act, states like Arizona, Colorado, California, Nebraska, Maryland, and New York have taken steps to improve access to sanitary products. However, the access and quality of products still varies from state to state.
And while prisons are at least starting to be considered within this narrative, jails aren't talked about as frequently, especially regarding the types of resources provided, as well as the actual conditions. For example, in California, many of the jails provide free pads, but charge higher than market prices for tampons. On top of that, the free pads that incarcerated individuals are given are extremely poor in quality. Oftentimes, they're not even able to be stuck properly onto the papery underwear that these individuals are forced to wear, and they're given in inadequate amounts.
The First Step Act is certainly an important one to make to get the conversation going on health rights within the incarceration system. But the way that we see it is it's just that, a first step.
Exactly. And more needs to be done to ensure that all individuals in all correctional facilities are getting the proper care that they need. Now, you have all this information, but may still be wondering why lack of access or legitimate policy matters. Well, let's talk about it by beginning the discussion on our last issue, physical health effects.
Well, first off, lack of proper feminine hygiene products and inadequate washing facilities can increase the chances of getting an infection. Menstrual hygiene management, or MHM, is defined by UNICEF as the, quote, use of a clean material to absorb or collect menstrual blood, and this material can be changed in privacy as often as necessary for the duration of the menstrual period. MHM includes soap and water for washing the body as required, and access to facilities to dispose of used menstrual management materials, end quote. As we have been discussing, women who are incarcerated don't have the opportunity to practice proper MHM in terms of both menstrual products and proper washing facilities. And across the world, poor hygiene has been associated with an increased risk of developing reproductive tract infections. So, generally speaking, there are typically three different types of reproductive tract infections: sexually transmitted diseases, endogenous infections, and iatrogenic infections. Poor MHM is correlated to endogenous infections, which are not transmitted sexually and are caused by an overgrowth of organisms, such as bacteria. Examples of endogenous infections include bacterial buildup or yeast infections. So what can happen is common bacteria such as Salmonella and E. coli can multiply rapidly from contaminated products used for menstrual hygiene. The bacteria can then enter the bloodstream, which can lead to sepsis, which is an inflammatory reaction to bacteria that could potentially cause organ damage as well as other complications.
Additionally, not routinely changing menstrual products can contribute to moisture retention and allow for increased growth of harmful microorganisms. Some of the common symptoms for women experiencing endogenous reproductive tract infections include itching, back pain, abdominal pain, and abnormal genital discharge. In the case of incarcerated women who are receiving inadequate menstrual supplies, these individuals may sometimes be forced to makeshift their own sanitary napkins using bed sheets or toilet paper. In 2018, it was reported in Maryland that an incarcerated individual who made a makeshift sanitary napkin suffered from toxic shock syndrome and had to undergo an emergency hysterectomy.
This was in 2018, you guys. That's not that long ago.
I know, and to be even more clear on what this even means, essentially what happened was that toxins were released into her body due to an overgrowth of bacteria, which, in her case, led to a procedure that removed her uterus, meaning that if she desired, she wouldn't be able to become pregnant. Although toxic shock syndrome is not highly prevalent in America and can be caused by reasons not related to menstruation, it is still very much a potential complication for women who have limited access to menstrual products like tampons and therefore have to use these products for longer periods of time than what is considered safe.
Besides inadequate menstrual products, improper washing and cleansing during menstruation can also lead to serious complications. One such complication is urinary tract infections, or UTIs. UTIs are bacterial infections within the urinary tract. This has the potential to develop into serious medical complications if left untreated, such as kidney damage, sepsis, and pregnancy complications. Increased prevalence of cervical cancer has also been observed in areas around the world where there is poor MHM. With all of this information, it's clear that since incarcerated people who menstruate are often in situations where they don't have the resources to properly care for themselves during their period, they are more prone to many of these complications.
We also want to recognize that there are a lot of people in our world who are unable to have proper MHM because of life circumstances, and that there are others who have to use makeshift products because they may not have access to any form of menstrual hygiene products. We aren't trying to minimize any of these experiences because all people should have access to the products that they need to feel comfortable and dignified. We want to highlight the experiences of women who are incarcerated because they're often not included in the narrative at all. and these issues of inaccessibility to menstrual products also bring to light the limited choices that incarcerated women have in deciding how to handle their own menstruation.
You're absolutely right. And there are so many steps we as a society could take to make this plight a little easier for incarcerated women, like making policies more specific. But we just don't. And it's because, if I'm being totally honest, we simply don't prioritize women's health in this country. And on top of that, incarcerated women and their experiences are even less of a priority. So, a quick little recap of today's episode. Menstruation in prisons is a seriously overlooked issue. Accessibility is limited, policy is minimal, and the health impacts of improper menstrual hygiene management can be quite detrimental, especially for folks who lack autonomy over their health.
Exactly. The lack of access to quality menstrual products and the fact that there isn't a lot of policy or legislation currently working to mitigate this issue can really be harmful to someone's health, physically and mentally. When we were first doing this research, I wasn't at all aware of the wide gaps in policies like the First Step Act and the many people that this legislation actually fails to help. And I was even less aware of how this act could impact incarcerated women in particular. I honestly thought it was a great policy until I started reading about it more closely to realize that there is still so much left unaddressed. In prison reform policy, just like in any other arena, it's crucial to critically think about not only what policies our administration is enacting, but also how they're going to be implemented and who is still being left behind. Thank you for tuning in today. In next week's episode, we'll be talking more about how these issues can be used as a form of social control and what that can do to someone's emotional and psychological well-being. Until then,
Women's Health Incarcerated works to raise awareness about the experiences of women within our current incarceration system, with a primary focus on health-related issues. The podcast can be found on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and if you want to learn more about our episodes, view the transcripts to see where we get our information, or find different ways that you could get involved, please visit www.winkthemovement.org. That's www.whincthemovement.org.